Welcome to Wake Up Podcast with Viv Trader. Viv is a curious person with the desire to embrace different opinions and expertise. Her focus is health, well-being, environmental, and political. She holds a non-judgmental approach and she is objective. Viv's ambition is to raise your awareness and contribute to a better world. She is also the founder of Vivalicious Food, which produces an innovative vegan baby food with added omega-3 from an algae oil. www.vivaliciousfood.com.
Today, I have the real pleasure of meeting with Sahar Jamal. Hello, you look gorgeous.
Hi, thank you. You too.
Where are you in the world, Sahar?
Right now, I'm based in Nairobi, Kenya. I'm just at my office.
Wow. Now, Sahar, how would you like to introduce yourself? Who are you?
Sure. So as you mentioned, my name is Sahar and I'm based in Kenya. I'm originally from Vancouver, Canada. My parents are from Tanzania and India. And so I was always sort of inspired to work in these regions. I spent the last decade focused on women's health in developing markets around the world through organizations like Johnson & Johnson and Aga Khan Foundation. And a few years ago, I was working at a maternity clinic in Nairobi and was working on a breastfeeding related project, which allowed me to encounter hundreds of women who were faced with the impossible trade-off between staying at home to breastfeed and returning to work to support their families financially. And that inspired me to start the organization that I run now, which is called Maziwa. And our goal is to allow women and empower them to balance both breastfeeding and working.
Wow, great mission. How long have you been running this company? How long have you been up and running?
We incorporated in 2019. So it's been almost 4 years now.
And how has it been received so far? How's it going for you?
Yeah, things are going really well. So our key mandate is supporting women who are working to continue breastfeeding. And the way that we do this is through the launch of a product called the Wema Breast Pump, which is a discreet wireless and portable breast pump that comes with the breast milk storage that allows women to express in almost any environment. And so we've heard stories of moms using the product in construction sites and marketplaces and salons. One of our early customers actually was a construction site worker, and she was able to wear the pump and use it while painting a house, and none of her male colleagues noticed. So that was a very cool story for us to hear. And overall, we've reached about 16,000 mothers and newborns with our products and our services. And in addition to distributing the Wema breast pump, we also have a network of breastfeeding ambassadors that are trained as sort of pseudo-lactation consultants who deliver education and hands-on lactation support in their communities. So we couple the technology with a little bit of education and support as well.
Wow. How come you got into this mission with breastfeeding?
Yeah, so I was, as I said, working at this maternity clinic called Jacaranda Health. And we had been sponsored to do some awareness driving and educational work around breastfeeding. So during that time, I learned about the magical powers of breast milk and how it has life-saving properties for infants. In fact, in markets like Kenya, developing markets specifically, babies who are not breastfed optimally are actually 14 times more likely to die than those who are. And so hearing statistics like that made me realize how important this process is for both mothers and children. But in the process of, you know, conducting this grant for Jacaranda, I ended up talking to hundreds of moms who were basically at a loss for what to do because they had to return to work to support their families. Their families were relying on their income. And often their income was a difference between living in poverty and having the ability to survive because most Kenyan families are reliant on dual incomes. And so these moms are hearing all about the importance of breastfeeding, and I'm sitting there trying to tell them that it's so important for you to exclusively breastfeed for 6 months. And I'm just making them feel more guilty and shameful than they already do, and not really giving them any kind of practical tool to balance both. So it just felt a bit irresponsible to be adding more guilt and shame to mothers who already feel that way inherently, and not necessarily giving them any kind of practical support in how to change their behavior. So in that process, I realized that awareness and education isn't actually the issue. The challenge is that many women are trying to juggle both their baby's health and their family's economic well-being.
And how old are the baby when the women return to work in Kenya? Are they like newborn, literally? Like how many months? Are they 1 month or?
Yeah, so technically Kenya does have a maternity leave policy of 3 months. But of course, most women are working in informal employment where there isn't an employer who's going to enforce that policy. So you can imagine women will be working as nannies, as cleaners. Sometimes they might work in a farm setting where the employer holds a lot of power and the employees have less leverage. And so either the policies are not enforced at the formal companies, or they're working informally where maternity leave is non-existent and there's no public support, you know, so even if you take 3 months, no one's going to pay you for that time. So as a result, moms are returning to work as early as a couple of weeks to maybe a month after giving birth. And if you compare that to the time that they should be exclusively breastfeeding, it's 6 months. So there's a pretty big gap between when they give up on breastfeeding or when they start weaning their baby onto other foods or milk.
So what are the benefits of breastfeeding for 6 months versus if you don't?
Yeah. And so as I mentioned, you know, the mortality rate stat is the most powerful one. The reason for that statistic, especially in developing markets, is because the substitutes for breast milk are very poor. So women will be using cow's milk or tea, water, soft foods like porridge, and the baby is not able to metabolize that in their early days. And what this means is that they're at a much higher risk of serious illnesses like stunting, malnutrition, pneumonia, diarrhea, all of which cause higher infant mortality rates at worst, or at best, you know, very problematic issues that can face challenges, you know, throughout their life. And you might also know that breast milk is very important for cognitive development and brain function. And so even if the baby doesn't get sick in their early days, not having that breast milk and that nutrition in their early life can actually have a long-term impact on their growth and cognitive development in the long term. In fact, there's a study that says that babies who are optimally breastfed have a 17% higher earnings in the future, which means that they are maybe more educated, more successful, more able to cope with you know, difficult work. And so there's a very real correlation between breastfeeding and I guess long term implications for that child. And I guess the other thing I will say is that breastfeeding is also very important for the mother. So mothers who don't optimally breastfeed or don't express the milk that their body is producing are at a higher risk of mastitis, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and diabetes. So this not only has an impact on the child, but also the mother.
Wow. So do you find that there is a lot of stigma in breastfeeding in Kenya? Is that like...
Yeah, I think that the stigma is more around breast milk expression, which is the pumping or expression of the milk. In fact, Kenya has a pretty high rate of breastfeeding initiation. So within the first day, the first maybe couple weeks, most babies are initiated on breast milk. Now, this rate goes down over time, and the biggest drop is at that 3 or 4 month period, which, as you can imagine, is the period where they're definitely going to be returning to work. And so the stigma, I think, is more around pumping at the workplace, pumping in public. Sometimes we suggest hand expression. Of course, that's a very strange thing for people to be doing. And so if you're not used to using your hands to express milk, it can be a journey for moms to learn about that. So I think the stigma and the cultural barriers around that. And there's also some cultural myths around, you know, when people should start feeding other foods or other milk. For example, it's often said that boys grow faster and so they need food earlier. And so some women are not aware that 6 months is a good amount of time to continue breastfeeding and not feeding any other food, not even water. So there is an educational challenge there, and that's why we recruit a network of healthcare workers and mothers from the communities in which they serve. We train them as lactation educators, and then we deploy them in those regions so that they can explain in their own words and recognizing their own culture what mothers should be doing and how they might want to adjust their behavior according to what the recommendations from the WHO and other healthcare bodies are.
Wow, that's amazing. And it's so natural as well. I mean, it is easy if you can breastfeed. It's all the best option, right?
Yeah, it's free. It's available. It's healthy for you and your baby.
Mm-hmm. Do you find in your generation, you're a bit younger than me, that what's your viewpoint on breastfeeding? I mean, you work with breastfeeding now, but for your friends and in your sort of generation, how do you think your generation, what's the viewpoint on breastfeeding?
It's a really good question. I think there's like a generational dynamic, but there's also a cultural dynamic. So depending whether you're in Europe or Africa or North America, I think there can be different perspectives. And so obviously I'm biased because I work in this space and I believe in the power of breast milk. I think in the US and Canada, perhaps there's kind of been a wave. So initially breast milk was the most important. Then formula companies came in with their marketing and then people were a bit more shy about breastfeeding in public. And now we're coming back to a point where mothers are proud to breastfeed in different settings. They're okay with that happening in public. And so in some ways the stigmas have been reduced. At the same time, because breastfeeding has become more popular, I think there is more pressure and more guilt around needing to breastfeed. And so some mothers who've had a lot of challenges have almost swung the other way to say actually fed is best. There's a phrase that says fed is best. So however you can feed your child in a nutritious manner, whatever you decide as a mother is, you know, your choice. And so, I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with that. Mothers should make whatever decision is right for them and their family. And I think what we're really passionate about at our organization is ensuring that mothers actually do have a choice. What's happening in Kenya is that we're still in that earlier wave where formula marketing companies have spent a lot of time and money telling mothers that formula is better than breast milk, which is just not a true fact. And luckily, public policy has now prohibited formula marketing because it was so dramatic that so many women were choosing formula over breast milk because of that marketing. So I think we're still in a place where one, women are getting the wrong information, and two, the maternal employment policies are not conducive to breastfeeding. So at the moment, women are not able to choose, or they're forced to choose between working and breastfeeding. And I don't think that is an okay dynamic. So I think having choice, having the freedom to decide whether you want to return to work, whether you want to continue breastfeeding, that's up to you as a mother, and you'll make the best decision for you and your family. But what I truly believe in is that choice should exist, and it shouldn't be dictated by some of our, you know, patriarchal societies where we're very oblivious to the challenges that mothers face.
Yeah. What do you think we all need to do in terms of supporting each other as women? What do we need to do to make breastfeeding more like the best option and you know, to take that into your workplace? You know, we live in a society today when women work, most women work, return to work quite soon after they have the babies. But to take the stigma away and to make it a normal standard procedure to breast pump at your workplace. It's like having a coffee break, you know. What do you think we need to do to get there?
Yeah. I mean, I think as women, the first thing we need to do is take out all the judgment from the process, right? There's already enough judgment. We don't need any more. And so, like I said, you have a choice. You should do what is best for you. If you want to be a stay-at-home mom, be a stay-at-home mom if you have the ability to do that. If you want to breastfeed, or if you want to pump, if you want to exclusively pump, whatever it is you want to do, take out the judgment. So number one. Number two, from a systems point of view, and I think that falls in the hands of women, but also also men and employers and policymakers, I think that we need to recognize that women are providing a service to society. They're doing one of the most important jobs. They are, you know, raising and nourishing our future generation. And they should be supported in that journey and not penalized. They should be celebrated in that journey. And so how do we make it as easy as possible for women to do this work for our society? Great, the work that they're doing for your company is great. And they're obviously adding economic value and they're supporting their families in that way. But the most important job they're doing is raising the future generation of children. And if we recognize that, then I think we change the way that we think about maternal employment policies. So we're not thinking about how do we make this breastfeeding break as efficient and short as possible. We're not thinking about, you know, how long can moms stay away from the workplace where we can do without them for maybe 3 months or 2 months. We're thinking about what does a child really need in their early days and how is it best supported by our policies. And so, I mean, employers alone may not be able to do this. That's why I think we need governments and we need the public sector to step in with some of this. And I think that, you know, once we think about that narrative differently, as you said, it's kind of like a coffee break. I mean, back in the day, people used to take cigarette breaks and I mean, maybe they still do, but it was very common to leave for 30 minutes or so quite often during the day. And why is that something that we are allowing? Yet we have a problem with breastfeeding breaks. Like, what is our priority here as a society and as a company? And so, I mean, yeah, that's kind of a systemic solution. And then finally, number three, you know, what we're trying to do at our company, which is maybe a smaller scale or more grassroots level, is providing access to tools and practical support. So let's stop talking about driving awareness and education. Moms generally know what they should be doing. They might be missing some information that we can provide to them, but the biggest thing they're missing is practical support. Once you tell them this is what they should be doing, I'm sure they're more than happy to do what's right for themselves and for their baby. But if we don't provide them access to the tools that they need and the hands-on support that's required, it will be very hard for them to comply and they'll end up just feeling guilty and shameful, which is not fair to them. So we at Mozilla are just trying to create access to that more practical support.
Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, you know, here in Sweden, we have nursing rooms everywhere. If you go to a shopping center, you have a nursing room. If you go to any major store, there is sometimes a nursing room, even in a big trademark store, you know. And I think perhaps we need to start thinking maybe we need to have nursing rooms in your workplace.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, you have a lunchroom. Perhaps we need to stand, you know, make it a standard to offer that to women. You know, because
and actually in Kenya, there is a policy that requires lactation rooms. Again, it's similar to the policy around maternity leave. So either it's only enforced in large companies or women are not working at a company at all. And so they cannot benefit from that space. Of course, we are very supportive of lactation rooms and if there's the ability to have one, there should be one, it's the law. So we certainly encourage that. But we also recognize, especially in developing markets around the world, women are doing all kinds of work that's not necessarily based in an office. Some of them are working in field sales. Some of them are working at a farm. Maybe you're a nurse that's going from room to room. And so how do we think about the different workplaces that women face and design technology that is suitable to that? And then also think about policy that can respect that. But lactation rooms, of course, you know, we want privacy. We want a beautiful room with a comfortable chair, you know, good music, calming atmosphere. We don't just want, you know, a bathroom or a closet like that someone goes to. And women are often, you know, the stories you hear, they're either pumping in their car, in a supply closet, or in the bathroom. And it's shameful that we are relegating these women who are feeding our future generations to these disgusting atmospheres when they're doing such an important job for our society. So absolutely supportive of great lactation rooms.
Mm. And I'm thinking about the cost for this, you know, the breast pump. Is it called Vima breast pump? Vima? Yeah.
Wema.
Sorry. How is it very expensive for the women in Kenya to buy it? Is it a struggle for them to come up with that kind of money?
Yeah, so that's definitely a key focus area for us. We want to make sure that the product is accessible and affordable. And so we sell and rent the product. So we sell it directly through retailers, through our website, as you would see anywhere else. And our sales price is about $85. I'm just using that currency sort of because it's global. But that is still about two or three times cheaper than any other double electric breast pump. So any equivalent breast pump would be two or three times more expensive. We also rent it for about $8 a month. Which is arguably cheaper than food. I mean, it's certainly cheaper than baby formula. So women can rent the breast pump, return it after they're done with it in a few months, and then we replace the parts and re-rent it to the next mom. So that makes it very easy for a lower income mom to afford it. And then finally, we actually also provide communal breast pumps to companies. So a company can purchase a pump that can be shared amongst its employees where each mom has her own parts. Mm-hmm. And again, that's actually more affordable for a company to implement than even a lactation space because it's about $30 a woman to purchase a communal pump.
Wow, that's an amazing idea. I love that. That's very, very clever. And, you know, it's like a staff benefit that the company should provide a breast pump. Imagine that in 10 years if all the companies had that option available for all the women, right? What an amazing world.
Yeah. Absolutely.
What is the biggest fear you have met in your life so far or have?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought about this question more from a personal perspective, not as much from the company, but I guess the way that I see it, when you're working for yourself or when you're working for something that you're really passionate about, the stakes are a little bit higher. I used to work at big companies my whole life, as I mentioned, Johnson & Johnson. I was actually based in the UK and working on Sweden and the Nordics at the time. But when I was working there, you know, I really loved my job, but the stakes were not as high. And now running this company, I feel like if I fail, I not only let myself down, but also the people that work for me and the people that I serve. And so I guess there's fear around that. And there's also some element of like an imposter syndrome around, you know, can this really be me? Can I really do it? So you always have that kind of inner voice that sometimes gets in the way. So that's been, you know, a challenge, but also something that I recognize as normal in this journey.
Yeah, because you are sort of a pioneer as well in your field. Is there anyone like you doing this in Kenya?
In Kenya, I don't think so. No, I haven't encountered anyone else. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people working towards improved breastfeeding and maternal health all over the world. But I think this is a unique, unique value proposition that I haven't seen anywhere else.
What a great role model you are for other women out there, other young women who wants to become an entrepreneur. Now, what is it? How is it to be an entrepreneur for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's really fun. I think, you know, you can be very creative. There's also like the practical aspect of business management and operations. Yeah, it's just a very innovative, exciting space. So generally, I really like it. And, you know, you get to have exposure to all cross-functional areas of the business. And so that's really great. And I also have the opportunity to meet other entrepreneurs who are doing great and inspiring things. I would recommend it. Generally very positive reviews.
Yeah, and you had to let go of your fears as well because you don't know the outcome. You're in charge of your own destiny, right? So it can be quite a scary thing as well.
Absolutely. You have to be very comfortable with uncertainty because nothing is ever certain. And even if you feel like, okay, once I get here, I'll be okay. Once I get here, I'll be okay. It's always another milestone, you know, that you're working towards. And so, you have to be comfortable with risk and uncertainty and have that kind of inner drive and spark because, you know, no one else is going to fire you or, you know, change your bonus or anything like that. It's all up to you and you have to be a bit proactive and self-motivated.
Was it hard for you to take the first step? And how did that step, what did that look like, the first step?
Yeah, so this was after I was working at the clinic and it was just a small kind of idea. I think I was quite fortunate, to be honest. I was in grad school and I had some support from the school to just explore the idea a little bit more. So I would recommend, you know, anyone who's looking at this kind of work, if you're able to spend time thinking about the problem rather than jump into a solution, that's always a good way to approach it. And so I had about a year to travel back to Kenya to learn more about the problem, to talk to hundreds of women, to think about what are the different options to solve this problem. And I had the luxury of being in school during that time. So I was able to, you know, research that a bit more. And so the first initial steps weren't that scary. And then I think there was a bit of a domino effect. So, you know, we were able to get some funding in. I set a milestone of, okay, if we are able to develop a prototype, then we'll keep going. If we're able to launch a product, then we'll keep going. And those kind of little steps along the way helped me get to where I am now. And, you know, I'm grateful for all the support that I've had, because I think if I had to do this all on my own, I might have given up earlier. And so it's really nice to have that support network and some resources and funding along the way that's been helpful.
So do you own the brand, the breast pump?
Yeah, so I own the company, but it's also a nonprofit. So we have a for-profit and a nonprofit. And the nonprofit isn't owned by anyone. That's the nature of nonprofits. But it focuses on our breastfeeding education work, our pro bono work. And then the for-profit is focused on the revenue generating elements, like the sales and things like that. But we haven't gotten any other equity investors, which means I own the organization at the moment.
And how did you come up with the invention?
Yeah, there was a lot of help, actually. So again, like I said, I was in grad school and we were connected to an engineering team that helped us develop the prototype. And then after graduation, I hired a technical team that helped us refine, you know, the design that we were looking for. And then we actually ended up engaging an original design manufacturer in China who developed and manufactured the product. So we've been working with them since then.
Amazing.
I mean, there's a lot of available products that are amazing. And so that's why we worked with a manufacturer in China to take their design and rebrand it and look at ways that it could be customized to Kenya. But, you know, I always say that I don't think the technology is rocket science. The challenge is that women's health is just very underinvested, and we haven't spent enough time and money on good products for women, because usually a lot of these companies initially were created by men. And so I think now there's been more and more of a focus around products that are really helpful for women. So the technology itself isn't rocket science. It's more about the combination of technology, branding, pricing, you know, financing options, distribution. And so that whole package is what's allowing us to succeed in a market where most women have never even tried a breast pump. Only 7% of moms in Kenya have ever tried a breast pump. So this entire package is what we see as our value. And the technology is just one component of it.
And can you see a market in other parts of Africa as well? Is it the same percentage numbers of breastfeeding in other countries across the...
Yeah, we're looking at the data for a variety of other countries, but the dynamics are very similar. Countries like Kenya have a very small, high class or upper income group, and then they have a very large low income group. And so it's that pyramid looks the same in many African countries. And usually people who use breast pumps are either high income people or expats. And so that's why only 7% of the population has ever tried a product like this. The 93%, either they're moms who are not working, which is maybe not our target, or they're moms who are working, but are working in very challenging environments, who are not making a lot of money, and who are suffering between the choice between breastfeeding and working. And so this dynamic is similar in so many countries. And so we're looking at the potential to launch in other East African countries, in West Africa or South Africa. But we're also curious about South Asia, Latin America. There's a lot of areas where similar dynamics exist. And we're just looking at how we can be strategic in the speed at which we scale so that we're not going too aggressively too quickly. But in terms of the need, I think it's there in a lot of countries.
And I think from a bigger perspective, if we can see a new generation growing up that have been breastfed, in the bigger scheme of things, what would that lead to?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like I said, cognitive development and brain development in children is the biggest benefit, in addition to, good health in the early days. So lack of illnesses like stunting, malnutrition, diarrhea. Not only would this be beneficial to our future leaders and the future generation, but also to our healthcare systems. We spend a lot of money trying to prevent maternal and newborn illness in markets like sub-Saharan Africa. So not only will we see the impact of this in 20, 30 years, even just right now, we'll see the impact of a reduction in spend on reactive policies and reactive funding for maternal and newborn illnesses. We can be more proactive and we can actually prevent some of these illnesses by implementing or driving improved breastfeeding behavior. And then I guess the other side of this equation is the working. So if we think about women in developing markets, they are the most important sometimes, but also the most marginalized populations because women are more likely to invest their incomes into their families and their communities compared to men. They're often the ones who bear the burden of a lot of the household responsibilities. And so they are such a critical component to development work, but they're also sometimes the ones who have the highest burden of responsibility. And so making their lives easier, allowing them to return to work, will drive female economic empowerment, which will also have a ripple effect on the communities in which they live because that will allow them to reinvest into their children's education, into community funding, into infrastructure that might be needed in the communities where they live. So there's a lot of benefits into investing in women and driving that economic empowerment.
Well, so we'll have a much more loving world because if children grow up feeling better, having better brains, their behavior will change accordingly. So you literally are
Absolutely.
contributing to a better world. Amazing. Love it. Well done, you.
You.
Where do you
Thank
hope we
you.
are in 10 years from now, from your viewpoint?
Yeah, in 10 years, we're looking to build a multi-product distribution network. So, in addition to breast pumps, what are other tools that we can provide working mothers that they might need in their journey? And we hope to be in multiple countries across sub-Saharan Africa, at least five in 10 years. And we're looking at training hundreds of ambassadors to drive this distribution so that they can provide hands-on support for women, gain certification themselves that makes them more employable, and drive supplementary income. So not only are we helping the mothers themselves go back to work and generate income, we're also helping our ambassadors generate additional income. And all of this will allow us to become a profitable, sustainable social enterprise that operates globally. And so that's what we're looking at. And I think most importantly, we'll continue to celebrate and support some of the most important members of our global society, which are working mothers in developing markets.
Beautiful mission. I love it. I wish you all the very best. I'll put
Thank
your
you.
contact details as well in the description link, so anyone who is interested
Absolutely.
in your mission can contact you directly as well. Thank you so much, Sahar. I
Wonderful.
thoroughly enjoyed meeting you today. It was great. Thanks for
Me
coming.
too. Thank you for your time.
I hope you got some valuable information today. Wake up, wake up. And thanks for checking in and waking up. See you next time.